Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who has never once risked it to get a biscuit, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and this is a special Thanksgiving weekend edition of Rob Has a Podcast. I am up early on a Thanksgiving morning to talk with the winner of the first Survivor, Richard Hatch, and get his take on Survivor San Juan del Sur. And it was a very exciting episode this week. Very, very good episode. And we have a lot to talk about here today with Richard Hatch. Had a lot to talk about this past Wednesday night on Survivor Know-It-Alls when it was a Thanksgiving surprise. Stephen Fishback was here with me in the studio, and that was very, very fun to do the Survivor Know-It-Alls live with Stephen, and a very fun episode if you want to check that out on robhasawebsite.com. And this is going to be a little bit different. This is going to be a special two-part episode of Rob Has a Podcast. So I'm just going to get this interview with Richard out, and then over the weekend, I'm going to get to your voicemail. So make sure you get those in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Of course, it is Thanksgiving today, and I just want to take a quick moment to say thank you to all the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast who make my daily life way more fun than it ever should be. I get to talk about nonsense and a lot of times be in my pajamas until way later than I ever should be allowed to do as a grown up. And so thank you very much for that. I have a lot of blessings in my life, and I do try to always be appreciative of all of the great things that have come to me. But especially today, I want to make sure, I just want to have thanks and also make sure I'm saying thanks to all of you guys who really helped make that possible. Thank you so much. All right. So before we get to the show with Richard today, I just want to take a moment and remind you guys, as you're doing your listening to the podcast today, whatever you may be doing, feel free to go ahead and do some online shopping. Make sure you don't go ahead and get involved with all of this madness at the store. You can go ahead and check out all of the Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals that are going to be happening on Amazon.com. They've got tons of deals and all sorts of things that they update by the hour. I've been trying to find some gifts myself, and I'm checking and refreshing the page over and over and over again. So as you're doing your shopping, it's the easiest thing you could do. When you go ahead and instead of going to the store, go on Amazon.com. It supports the podcast. You don't pay any extra money, and it's a win-win situation. So in the U.S., you could use our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or in Canada, use our new link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, CA, or click the banners in the sidebar of robhasawebsite.com to go directly to the Black Friday homepage and Cyber Monday homepages on Amazon. All right, everybody. It's a very special holiday episode of Rob Has a Podcast because we get to spend Thanksgiving with one of the great legends of Survivor. Here he is, the original winner of Survivor Borneo. Here is Mr. Richard Hatch. Richard, Hatchy Thanksgiving.
Hey. What's up, Turkey Boy?
I'm Turkey Boy?
Well, today you are. You're Rob, but today you're Turkey Boy. It's Thanksgiving. Who the heck actually does something like this on Thanksgiving?
We do.
It's a food holiday. Can't you imagine how important that is to me?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Rich, first off, thank you for taking time out on Thanksgiving morning. What are you guys doing today?
You always take priority, Rob. Emmy and I and the dogs are making our way up to Nova Scotia, where we're going to wander around for a little while. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of the world, and we really like it there.
So, like, you guys are going to go camping?
Kind of, yeah. we have a van, and it's got plenty of blankets and a tent and sleeping bags. And so, yeah, we have no specific destination, so we could camp wherever we land or just wander around.
Wow. Look at you guys. Are so brave. Listen,
there's not really too much brave about that, Rob. We live in a really modern world where it's pretty easy for me to stay warm. And then I'm, I, I'm, I have, I have more than enough insulation to keep my husband very, very warm and toasty.
Okay, well, that's good. But it's very cold where you're going.
There's an image for you.
Yeah, there it is.
what did you ask?
I said that it's very cold where you're going.
Well, it's no colder than where we live.
I guess so.
We live in Newport, Rhode Island, and really, if you look at a map, the coastline up through Maine and into Canada and Nova Scotia veers in a sharp kind of curve to the right out into the Atlantic Ocean, and the Atlantic Ocean keeps the entire area moderate. So it's really not much colder than Rhode Island in Canada.
I'll take your word for it, Rich.
It's true. It's true. Come camping. You'll see. I'll keep you warm, Rob.
Whoa. Whoa. All right. Rich, I want to talk to you about Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Yay.
Rich, this was the
best. Has not been very exciting.
No, this was the best episode last night.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Yeah. Now we're in. But see, I tell people this all the time. It's a lead up now because of the history of the game to the merge. Because all the way to the merge, we know these people aren't going to be on the jury. We don't really have a lot of respect for them as players because we don't know who's going to last yet. We haven't seen them use their skills. So for me, my investment begins now anyway in the show and in the characters.
Yeah.
So I'm happy, I've got to say, that last night was as interesting as it was because it really hadn't shown a lot of promise prior to that.
Well, it really was. And we had, at times, it was like the best of Survivor where you had somebody who had a very elaborate plan that was taking shape where really Reed was spearheading this thing to get rid of John. And then at the same time, you had somebody who completely blew the plan by just like getting thrown off by the plan that he was a part of in Keith. What's your take on what happened overall last night? And then we'll get into more detail with each of the players.
Well, I do. I agree with exactly what you said there. I love that Reed was, I think he said, go big. Or yeah. Go home, literally, something like that. And he was going big. So I very much appreciate his thoughtfulness, his understanding of the game, the way he went about it. And I think, I'm not certain, but I think Reed understood the risks involved, particularly with Keith. He recognized that there are limits there, and I think he even spoke to them. And that's the nature of the beast. Survivor, even for an effective player, which thankfully we're seeing more of them in recent seasons than we had ever before, but even with all the effectiveness in the world, all the understanding of the game that you could possibly muster, you're still dependent upon other people's brains. And you can see the challenges in those brains, constantly unfolding. Some of the comments that Keith was making throughout the game made you know that that he's a liability. So when he blew it at Tribal Council, that wasn't surprising to me, but it was one of those moments where you're on the edge going, ooh, do they recover? Do they not? Boy, were they scrambling.
Yeah. Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points because we saw that Reed, he gave up his spot on the reward, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in more detail. But he said the reason why he wanted to stay was he needed time to talk to Keith. And he said, you know, I don't think that Keith really understands the game. And it's obvious that he really didn't, going back to that. So I think it's interesting that you not only have to have the numbers in the game, but you have to have the right numbers because just because somebody's a number, if they're not smart enough to realize, you know, what the plan is, then that's as good as not having the numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree.
It was very funny.
Knowing, Go ahead.
Oh, you go
ahead.
The
dog farted, so I can hardly breathe, and I just lost a little bit about what you were saying. When the dog lets one of those go, it's not easy in this van. And I don't want to open the window because then you won't hear anything. So just imagine my suffering for you right now.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you. for your Dutch oven with the dog.
Yeah, exactly.
For the sake of the podcast. But with Keith, I went back and I watched this scene this morning because I couldn't even comprehend all of it last night. And I went back.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, you know, Reed was talking about, you know, well, you know, it's obvious that Wes and Keith has the numbers. Now he's bringing Jeff into this. And so then Jeff goes right to Keith, like, Keith, can't get more clear than that. And he's like, no, it can't. And, you know, he's like, and what I have to say is, you know, we're talking about idols and stuff. And he turns to Reed and says, stick to the plan. And then everybody is like,
doing that. Yep.
And Keith is just like, like, he's like cracking up laughing, not realizing that he completely blew up his son's game. Everything went down with that stick to the plan.
Yeah, one comment. And you know, it's not arbitrary. I've brought this up a few times, I think, when we've spoken. It's always a danger when you're in tribal council with Jeff. Jeff's great now at making sure that he doesn't cross a particular line. He's been very good about not outing somebody intentionally. But you've got to know that he's probing to the brink. He's going right up to the edge of what he can, of where he can go, without giving away something that he might have seen in the dailies or something that would cause one of the players to know something they would otherwise not have known. So those conversations at tribal council are fraught with danger, and clearly Keith didn't have a clue, and just the giggle and the smile and to say what he did was a real letdown. Obviously, everybody knows now to that entire changed the game from that point on irrevocably. It would have been a different game, and it could have been a fascinating move if Keith hadn't done that. I mean, Natalie, who we'll get to, amazes me, and she's the one who turned around and was clear about what had to happen. She knew with everything in her that John had to play that thing. And she told him, play your idol, you know, play your idol. And he's like, what? She's like, well, whatever, do what you want. Ah, play your idol. She knew.
All right. I'm glad you brought up the Jeff thing, because, Rich, I had a chance to go back and watch Survivor Borneo over the summer, and very, very fun. I feel like, you know, some people say, oh, it's slow. I thought it was still very interesting to go back and watch it. And I think that there's more strategy there than people realize. I think that people give it sort of a just like, oh, it was OK. It was just one thing, because people talk about pagonging so much. But there was a lot of times where it was, you know, teetering and interesting stuff. But one of the really interesting things that happens in that first season is the first time Jeff talks to you and Sue and Kelly about the alliance. And he's like, so is there an alliance? And you guys are like, no, there's no alliance. And it was the first time that anybody ever didn't tell the truth at tribal council. And they show in the episode,
right,
you guys come back and like, hey, if he's going to ask questions like that, I'm not going to tell him what he wants to hear. I'm not going to, if he's going to, and you guys were thrown off, but clearly you guys said that, like, we're not going to say anything that's not to that's going to better our game. And for Reed last night, I think that he kind of got a little caught up in that, where he ends up sort of like a, not just like giving a non-answer, but basically, you know, in his attempt to, from the question that Jeff asked, mislead other people, he also gets thrown off by the same thing. And it's such a big part of the game of how do you play the Jeff part of the tribal council.
It's a really, really powerful part to play. And in the first episode, the first tribal council, the first season, is the first time anybody had the opportunity to even think about it. So not just for us, but for Jeff, too. And so he recognized that it really isn't fair of him to expose things that he learned in ways that one of the contestants would not have learned. So over time that happened. But until that time, those were instantaneous decisions. I mean, right on the spot in the moment. Do I lie? Do I not? And it's why I talk to people about before going on these things, they need to know who they are. I knew this was the game. I wasn't wrestling with, I have the ethics and integrity of anyone I've ever met. I'm very proud of myself for those kinds of qualities. But in the game of Survivor, it is not, those two things particularly are not applicable. They're not part of the game. It's not about whether or not I lie. And that goes onto the balance sheet of my integrity. That's craziness to think that way. And you, if you watched the first season, watched people really handicapped by that, not knowing what to do, and going with traditional ethics inside a game that calls for you to leave those at home. And people are still wrestling with that.
Yeah,
it befuddles me, 29 seasons in, but they're still wrestling with that, viewers and contestants alike.
Rich, one of the things that we were wrestling with last week was whether it was the right move for John and Jacqueline to target Jeremy at that last tribal council, because they had an alliance of six and they end up getting rid of somebody from their own group at the final nine. And we had a lot of debates about it on this show, but I would just love to get your take on the, should they have targeted Jeremy when they did?
Wow, that's a great question, because we'll never know. And all I'm left with is giving them credit for being bold enough to recognize that were they to get to the end with Jeremy, they could very well lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was playing really well, and I think he could have been very respected by the time he got to the end.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We can't know. But I have to respect the move. It was a big move. It was at that moment in their favor, because they remained that kind of, you know, flex person that people needed to go to keep happy.
It really was a tough spot for Natalie to be in, because her main ally in the game, her most trusted person, her new twinnie practically, ends up getting blindsided by these people, and then they want her to come back into the fold. And so it is a tough spot in the game when people have lied to you but say, okay, you know, we're not lying to you now. We had to lie to you before, but everything is good and you should come back with us. And she's mad about them blindsiding Jeremy. She wants to take out John, but ultimately she's able to put those feelings aside and work with these people again.
Let's not make light of that. That, and I know you're not, but I'm going to emphasize that ability of Natalie to set those feelings aside is just a hint of why you're going to hear me gush about this woman the rest of the time we're talking.
Yeah.
Because, wow, that's just good. You know, she's an example of how to play this game, regardless of how it turns out for her. She's playing and has played in such an amazing way, in all the subtle ways that are so absolutely essential to an opportunity to win. I really respect Natalie's play in this game so far. What do you think?
Yo, she's been very good. Had you seen the twinnies on The Amazing Race before, or this is your first exposure to them?
No. I saw them before as well.
Yeah. And were you a fan on The Amazing Race?
I wasn't a fan or a not fan. I thought they were interesting characters.
Yeah.
I don't watch the race in the same way and with the same glasses on that I do the Survivor. So I don't like think about their gameplay and wonder how they're doing. You know, I save that for Survivor. It's enough of my life. but I was drawn to who they are, just as people. There were a couple of I thought there were a couple of times when they were catty in a way that was at their own expense.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
That seems utterly eliminated now in Survivor. And that's just a result of intelligence. That's just a result of thinking before you enter a game about what's required when you get there, I think. And so I want to give her credit for that, for being different in whatever subtle ways she is now different from how she played The Amazing Race.
Well, let me ask you, Rich, do you think, is that a premeditated thing, or is that the sort of thing that, like, that kind of attitude ends up getting perpetuated by the fact that the two of them are always together and they sort of feed off that energy and it sort of like escalates when they're together? But now, for the first time, Natalie is now away from Nadia for a couple of weeks, and now she doesn't have that sort of identical person to her that's the same personality that she has. And I wonder if, because she's alone for the first time, that she's more in touch with the other people that are around, as opposed to just falling back to her identical twin?
I think a couple of things about that. I think my opinion is that, yes, there's a dynamic that the two have developed over time as twins in which they're comfortable kind of being catty. But, and that I don't think is premeditated. So I don't think who they were was premeditated on The Amazing Race.
Mm-hmm.
However, to their credit, I think there was some premeditation to how they're going to involve themselves in Survivor. They saw themselves on the race, so they learned from that, and they did not bring that same thing to Survivor. Yes, I also agree with you that they, being separate, now have to interact in a way. Natalie's left having to interact without a partner that she's used to being around, but they're adults, so they had to have had times during their lives when they've, you know, spent a little time thinking and talking to other people alone. So it's not as if she's, you know, a Siamese twin. she's and Nadia are capable of interacting in the world as individuals. And beyond that, I think Natalie's behavior now isn't just premeditated. It's flexible enough and focused enough and maintained so far throughout this game as beautifully for the game of Survivor as anyone I've seen play.
Yeah.
She's really thoughtful. She's really thoughtful.
For Natalie, you know, going back to this idea of having a twinnie, whether it's Nadia or then she says, you know, Jeremy is like my twin and that's my person, that's my close confidant. She immediately is able to switch gears and make it be Baylor is the person that is going to be her person who's her close confidant. And I think in the game of Survivor, when you can have that person who is your close person that you can share almost anything with, not unlike Richard and Rudy in the first season, I think that always works good when you have a really tight alliance of two. And Natalie seems able to do that. It doesn't matter who it is.
Agreed. I don't know about doesn't matter who it is, but yeah, she's definitely done it well so far. And the thing with Baylor is clearly, from my perspective, and you'd tell me what you think, clearly, you know, Natalie driven. It's not Baylor driven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think what I mean by that is this is Natalie's ability that you just described. Natalie's in control of whether or not they are as close as they are. Baylor isn't an awful player by any chance, but she's not as adept at being perceived in the way she'll need to be as Natalie is.
Let's go back to Natalie, and let's talk about this decision to tell John at the tribal council to play your idol. And this was somebody that earlier in the episode,
yeah,
she said she wanted to see him go home. Did you like that she told John to play his idol?
No.
Okay.
But that's kind of selfish and not really well thought through of me. I was like, oh, for crying out loud.
What, you wanted to see John go home?
Oh, not, yes in the moment because I so respected the play, not because I wanted John gone, because I, my head had already gone to where would the game go with John gone. And so I was ready and thinking, wow, I mean, they're really pulling this off. And I thought it was I think it's the first time that something like that had been pulled off when they were going to split the vote and then switch and have somebody else who was part of splitting that vote kick off a real powerful player who had an idol. I thought that was a really unique set of circumstances that was worth my getting excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I wanted John gone for personal reasons. John, you know, is playing, but I don't think John and Jacqueline are as intensely crafty as was Reed's plan then. So I was excited to see it happen. And because of that, I was thinking, gee, what's going on? Why would she do that? And I'm really kind of still sitting, and we're going to have to wait and see why Natalie felt the need to tell John to do that. You know what I mean? She clearly wants to reap the benefits of that when somebody's alliance, in that he owes her, whatever.
Yeah.
Loyalty.
Yeah.
what's that thing? What's that thing? I don't know anything about Survivor. Oh yeah. That's right. It's loyalty.
I thought it was a good move for her ultimately, because I feel like that it really does keep the target off of her, because now they could keep John around for a while. But I think that she's part of the group with Missy and Baylor that's going to be ultimately controlling things. And so she's back with that five, but I think she's in a good spot to potentially then get rid of at least John later on, after they get rid of a few of these other guys, the stragglers now in Reed and Alec and Keith.
I question that last part, whether John will be in a position whether she'll have John in a position to go home. Maybe. I don't know if they'll ever get him in that position again, because he'll be so on guard. I do agree that it takes the target off of her, but she's playing so well, I don't think the target really had been on her. And I think she's kind of respected for a lot of the moves she's been making. And earlier, Reed, accurately questioned her reason for giving up a challenge win. And then, of course, he did it himself, which is smart.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I agree with you.
All right. So Richard is having some trouble hearing me on his end, and vice versa. So we're ending up switching the connection to something that's going to be a little more able to connect us the entire way through. So here's now Richard on his phone. Richard, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing very good. For me, I felt like the whole thing last night ended up being a chess match between Reed and Natalie, and we saw them go toe to toe in the immunity challenge, which was really, really fun. But at the end of the day, I felt like Natalie just wanted to make sure she beat Reed in this round. And by telling John to play the idol, I felt like she got what she wanted, which was putting Reed in a bad position.
I think you're right. And I think the rest of the gameplay will see whether it was worth it. But yeah, I think Reed is really, but he knew it, but he's screwed. You know, he knew that he was risking big when he made the move towards John. And now losing that, puts a real big target on him.
Yeah.
And did you notice at Tribal Council, the almost respectful way that he was looked at afterwards when they all figured out that that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was almost good try. Instead of in the past the almost insane kind of real anger, like, oh, let's pretend we're not in a game. Oh, you don't like me. You know, the stupid crap that people do. they weren't doing. That's a sign of better play, better gameplay, I think, and I love it.
Yeah, on Reed's part or on the other player's part?
On the other player's part, who were looking at Reed going, ooh, nice move. Sorry, bud.
Yeah.
You know, they respected that he tried, but
well,
they didn't get all angry.
It's easy to laugh about it when it didn't work, you know? that helps.
Yes and no. I mean, I agree that it is easy to laugh about it if you were the target and you're still there, kind of. But all in past seasons, idiots, I got to say it that way, who were playing the game and were in the same position John was in, would get angry.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? Who are you saying? That was stupid. What are you doing? You know, because they were fearful that they were that close to getting kicked out. And so they go after that person like that person is a bad person. Bad person going after me in the game, you know. And so I'm happy to see that stupidity seems to be reduced.
Yeah. And going back and watching it, it's clear, like, there were some people after the vote, specifically Baylor, that was like, what just happened? And Natalie is the one, she, like, very quickly is like, yeah, Reed and Alec, they were lying. They didn't vote with us. They voted for John.
Yeah, Natalie knows, she's got what's going on. Baylor, that's perfect. What just happened?
Yeah.
You know, she's not as airheaded as many of the players we've seen, but she's clearly not. She clearly does not have the grasp that Natalie and a couple of the other people have on what really is going down in this season.
Now, Rich, what about Missy? I'd be very interested to get your take on her because she's somebody who's been in a powerful position really since the swap. But she's somebody that, you know, some people say that they feel like she has no chance to win the game. So I would love to get a read on Missy from you.
Well, the reason I agree with those who say she won't win is because I think she's got a little bit more emotion invested in her game than is practical for a winner. I'm not sure if I can come up with specific examples. It's a sense I get as I watch her respond to her daughter and struggle with gameplay in ways that shouldn't be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think. And she hasn't garnered the respect of enough other players to be kind of either leading because she's respected or out of everyone's radar. She's still, you know, people. So she's somewhere in that middle ground of where she's going to be eliminated at some point, I think.
And what about Baylor? You said that you think that she's not too bad. Do you think that she's in the mix? Is she somebody who could win the season?
No, Baylor can't win either. I think Baylor's too much tail of the dog. She's just kind of, you know, trying and earnest in her efforts, but she's not, you know, it's funny. She's not skillful enough, really. And then I would say, who was that last winner?
Tony!
Well, when that comes to my mind, he made enough mistakes I don't know, more than I could count. But he still won. So I've got to hesitate. You know, she could learn since she's gotten through a few spooky areas where she's just kind of looking. Even last night to say what's going on is evidence she's a little behind the eight ball. I say too far behind the eight ball to win.
Well, can we go back to the Tony thing for a minute? Because I think that's really interesting. Because when you and I talked last season, you know, you weren't high on Tony's game. And there were certainly times I wasn't high on Tony's game. And I missed that Tony was going to be the winner by a lot. And I really had a lot of critical things to say about Tony's game. And I would just love to get your sense of, do you feel like, were we wrong? Or was Tony just so good at correcting mistakes? Well, what's your take on Tony now that we saw him actually go on to win and win in a pretty dominant fashion in the end?
I can't believe you just asked me if we were wrong.
We were right?
of course we were right. Now, let me explain why. We were talking about his gameplay, and his gameplay was awful at times. And the reason it was awful at times is because any of those times about which we were talking, he could easily have not had the luck to make it through and been gone. So that those weren't intentionally, carefully thought through risks that he took. They were accidents that he happened to survive. And that's not good gameplay. The fact that he did survive, great, more power to him. That's super. You won. You deserve to win. But it's not a result of him having crafted a game that something that should be, followed or respected for its clarity or its strategy or, it just wasn't. He was so hyped up and made so many errors that it's difficult to point out pieces of that game that you would recommend anybody else use.
Yeah, well, I agree with that last part, that I don't know if anybody else could ever play the game like he did. But I'll give him more credit, because I think that he did a lot of things wrong, but then I think he was able to rebound from them and do other things that were unconventional but ended up working for him. And I don't think anybody else could ever do what he did, but I think he just played the game at 300 miles an hour when, yeah, if he would have just slowed down, I think he could have played a much cleaner game.
Yeah, a much cleaner game and a game that gave him more control of whether or not he was going to win. I don't want to take away from him exactly what you described. I agree with you that he deserves credit for having been able to recuperate after having stabbed himself a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to give him credit for a game well played in which he stabs himself so many times. But I agree that the after play, the aftercare, the makeup, the band-aids were all sufficient to bring him to a win. And that's something that's credit worthy. Yeah, I don't wanna take that away from him at all.
Yeah. Rich, is Reed a dead man walking now?
Reed sure looks like a dead man walking to me. Yeah, he would be a dead man walking if I were John or Jacqueline or anybody that was so on the other side, so obviously targeted. It would be very, very tough for Reed to convince me of any reason whatsoever to keep him around. He's clearly a threat at the end because they'll respect that he made the bold move, and he's clearly capable of making bold moves. So danger, 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 Will Robinson.
Yeah.
I think he's got a big target. Short-lived in the game.
Yeah, I think he's going to be definitely, if not the next person out, the one after that. If he's got to just, win the immunities at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Keith no longer has an immunity idol, but like that ever matters. Keith has been exposed now in a way that helps.
Yeah.
There's no reason to get rid of him. Why? Let's keep him. No matter whose side he's on.
Yeah.
He's clearly not a threat.
Yeah, well, how about this, Rich? Now, after last night's tribal council, that Keith played his idol, John played his idol, the only person left in the game with an idol is Natalie.
Yeah, I know. I love it. And not many people know she has one.
Yeah, only Baylor. But now the question is, and I thought this was curious last night, that she's like, come on, we got to go look for the idol. Why involve Baylor in looking for the idol? Because Baylor is going to tell Missy, and then who knows who Missy is going to tell. Like, why give up the control of that information?
Brilliant, brilliant question. Did Natalie believe that she couldn't look for it without Baylor? Did Natalie believe that if she'd kind of concocted an excuse to not get the water and stay and look on her own, she would have been more at risk because they would then start to think of her as sneaky and underhanded? Is Natalie's gameplay so amazing that she's considering these subtleties in bringing in Baylor, which is a risk in itself? I hope so. That's all I can say. But we can't know. We won't know. That's all that's unfold.
Yeah. Rich, what about John and Jacqueline? We haven't talked about them too much. What have you seen from those two? Do you think that they're players who are in contention?
I'll tell you an odd reason that I think they're in contention. Other than how attractive they are. I mean, they're both so physically stunning.
The hottest couple, period.
Yeah. They're just hot. Smoking hot. And that's interesting. For a few reasons, because I don't know, this might be not politically correct or something or whatever, but smoking hot folk typically aren't as together as these two are, as bright, as crafty. Not that I'm saying they're the brightest I've ever seen, but they're making good decisions and they're calm in a way that I respect and appreciate. And so far, they've been playing together quite well.
Yeah.
So teams from next week are quite
disconcerting.
But let me say a little bit about what I think about how they've played. It's not just their look. There's a little interesting thing that I watch and try to integrate into my thoughts about the players. And that has to do with the producers. So I'm always watching Survivor to see, with one little part of my brain, wondering, what are they showing us? What might we not be seeing? And what we've seen about these two, particularly last night, when producers chose to share that personal information about Jacqueline's not being able to have children. And
yeah.
John, very, very commendable love for her, regardless of her ability to birth children. They'll adopt, they'll do whatever. Clearly, he's got his priorities straight there. That's really amazing. People will be drawn to that. So the idea that the producers integrated that into the show is something that made me think, certainly it's worthy to tell our audience, but why did they tell them? Yes, because they were going to help kids and play baseball with them, but I'm wondering if there's more to that and that they'll be around and that's part of CBS's helping us love people that are going to be there longer.
Yeah. Well, this
is my head work.
Well, good. I'm glad you brought that up because that leads us into some of the questions that I have for you from the listeners of the podcast. And the first thing I want to ask you from Tyler Cacuno, he wants to know, does Rich believe in the winner's edit? And if so, who does he think is getting it? And I think that speaks to a good point about that John and Jacqueline scene. Do you feel like they edit the show to make the winner have a better edit than, say, the person who was coming second, third, fourth, fifth place?
I think that varies. I think they edit the show to do that, and I think other shows they edit it to make just the opposite, to make you think that person would never have had a chance to edit. The show is edited, and that's just a requirement. It's a necessity. You can't watch the hundreds of hours of footage, so it's edited. But I do believe they edit it in a way that best shows the reality, to use that word, of what really occurred out there. They do their best to expose as much as they can of the dynamics that are going on among the players. It's to their benefit to edit it that way. It's what makes the game rich and real and have the following it still has today. So I respect the edit. Now, to the question, to the point, is there a winner's edit? I don't think there's one specific winner's edit. But certainly from day one, when they knew I won, a month before the first episode even aired, they had to edit it in a way that didn't let people know I was destined to win. Now, could they have? I think perhaps they could have because so few players were really playing the game. it was very challenging. I don't want to take away from me the difficulty. It was very difficult to get through it without any kind of a template. But still, it could have been edited differently. So I don't know. You know, I'm not an editor. I think they have to edit. And is there one particular winner's edit that we should be watching for? No. I think they're smarter than that. I think they vary it. But like last night, I think we need to pay attention to things that are shown to us.
Mm-hmm.
They're of value. And that was shown to us. And I wonder why.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, and back in the first season, they did show us in the first episode, you say that, you know, I've already got the $1 million check made out. So there were some hints along the way for you.
There really were, but that specific edit was, oh, well, they would never have done that if he's actually going to win in the first show. Remember, the show had never been on before. So, wow, they were in the first show. They're not going to say, hey, it's already written, I've won, and then have it win. That you know, the viewers aren't going to believe that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So then in the second show, if they did that, you know, it's a game. It's a game. It's one of the levels of the game. And I trust that the editors are doing their best to present a game that we'll best enjoy, that most accurately reflects what happened. It's okay. In everybody's interest to do that.
All right, let's take a question from Louise Johnson, who wants to know, what's Rich's take on all the trading this season, both bartering with Jeff and reward swapping, right? Hasn't this gotten crazy this season from people like, Jeff, I'll give you the rice for the for Flint or for the fishing gear, and then, okay, how about this? I don't want to go on the reward. I only take this person on the reward. Do you like all this stuff, or has it gotten out of hand?
I think it's interesting in the exact same way you're asking the question. What's going on? I think it's a foray into whether or not this suits the game. And I think that Jeff and the producers are probably faced with, I don't know, well, this is different. We're asking for a lot this season. So far, personally, I think they have well-limited the players' control. Like, I worried about them giving away too much, and I don't think they have. I think the producers have already decided, like, this fire, you know, they need to get it in order to have the energy to be interesting to watch on TV. So they're a little bit flexible with what they give when asked or when challenged. I don't know. I don't think it's gone too far yet. I think it's an interesting experiment, and we'll have to see how it pans out. For me, it's a little bit new, and so that makes it interesting. This is interesting. How far can we push this?
Mm-hmm.
Should we ask for this? Should we ask for that? If I were a player and I saw that happening and I recognized that it was even possible, I would ask my ass off. Trying to figure out ways that would benefit me or my life.
Would you give your rewards away, or do you believe in, you know, you got to take the rewards when you have a chance to get them?
Oh, I as long as they allowed it, I would use whatever is in my best interest. Now, there's nobody that can tell me, Natalie having given away her award, or last night, Reed having given away his award, wasn't in his best interest. Even now, even though it's a game, remember they're hungry, they've been there for weeks, their emotions are raw, they're closer to the surface. Even now, Reed can play on his having said this is. That was generous of him, and he can play it and hopefully be rewarded.
Yeah, but I think it's a double-edged sword, too, because, you know, if you know, somebody is looking like, oh, such a great guy, he's giving away the rewards. You know, at some point I'm going to say, well, now I want to get rid of this person because one, everybody likes them. And two, how are you supposed to beat this person in the end who's giving away all of this stuff? And I even felt that way in my season when we had something similar to that, where Matthew, who I played against, gave up his chance to see his loved one so that everybody could do it. And immediately thereafter, I'm like, well, now I have to vote this guy out because now everybody likes him too much.
I agree, but I think you're making a mistake that far too many people make, and that is thinking people think like you. And I don't think they do. You're a great player. You get the game. You always have understood the dynamic. I still think most players don't. And those are the players who will give Reed all the credit and more for doing the things that he did in the situation he did them. Last night, that situation was perfectly laid in his lap. You know, for them to be crying, for Baylor to have talked about how Missy's never won, and, you know, she was hoping her mom would get something, that makes it seem as if this isn't crafted solely by Reed, just as a way to get him something he wants. It makes it look genuine. Whether it is or not doesn't matter. It looks genuine to those people who aren't you. So you've got to remember, you're playing with people who aren't as aware as you are.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Well, Rich, now how do I do this in Survivor or in life, or how does a person do this? How do I separate, oh, this is how I see something versus how this is how the rest of the world sees something? And whether that's in Survivor or in our everyday lives.
Yeah, really, really, really challenging. And it's one of the things that I think makes somebody in real life, let's take that. I think it makes somebody a really good person when you have, it's called consideration. When you're able to really think about how someone else perceives something, how it's impacting them, not how it would impact me, and then assuming that's how it's impacting them, that's selfish in a way that I think has us in the world we're living now, a very troubled, selfish place. And so it's not easy. I think it takes intelligence. I think it takes focus. I think it takes intention. And I work on it day in and day out to recognize the people with whom I'm living and to respect that they are perceiving things in ways different from how I may be. And when you do that, as difficult as it may be, the rewards are indescribable for everybody. Positive. It's not a manipulative thing. So, I don't know. It's different in the game. I would do anything in the game to be manipulative. That's the point. That's what the game is. That's not a detriment. That's not a negative thing to my ethics or something like that.
Yeah. Rich, going back to Thanksgiving, Nick Fishman wants to know which player this season has been the biggest turkey, and you could use people that are in the game or not in the game at this point.
Well, if they're not in the game now, I've kind of forgotten them. You know, how cold is that? You know, this is the Lord. Like I said, this is when now they're playing for the win. And this is when I'm invested. This is when I start caring about who's there and what they're doing, and they've got some time in, so my turkey's easy. I think it's Keith. You know, I think for him to have done what he did last night, that's just an objectively reviewed turkey move. You know, no offense. You know, you did what you did. You are who you are. There's nothing negative about that. That's just where you're at, and to have not had sufficient awareness and control to not say that last night changed the game for him, his family, and every other player in ways none of them can even know yet.
Yeah, really, very, very tough night for both of the nails, for Wes and for Keith.
Yep.
You know, we haven't mentioned one time, I think, about Wes, the guy who was voted out. Did you have any thoughts on Wes?
well, did you see Dad? Hey, well, do you want to play it? You know, don't have you not already had that conversation?
Yeah.
With tribal council, well, do you want to play it? You know, kind of half-heartedly offering it to his son. You know, do you want to be that father? It shouldn't matter. You're playing the game. If you've had that conversation going in, this isn't about you're my son. This is about me beating the rest of them and then beating you.
Yeah. So,
I think. But you could have had a different conversation, you know? And, you know, this isn't me about beating you. It's only me for us about beating them, and I will sacrifice myself in order for you to have the chance to win. But that would all have been discussed ahead of time if you had half survivor brain. And to watch Keith ask Wes that on his way up, on Keith's way up, and the idol to Jeff was just more evidence of what a turkey, survivor turkey, he really is, I think. So that's Wes just kind of there. Wes is gone. You know, yeah, Wes is I'll give Wes this credit. I'll give Wes credit for having said, I regret having not tried harder to win immunity and having given in to the food. I love that, because that's a regret he should have. He should not have been very confident last night. He should not have stepped down for whatever that food was. And I get it. It pulls on you. You want it. But I'll give him credit for recognizing afterwards that part of why he was sitting where he is his own fault.
But Rich, how do any of these people that are in bad positions in the game decide to go and you know, eat chicken wings or any of these temptations that Jeff brings in front of them?
Perfect. We're, again, right back to our discussion just before this. They're not you. You know, it is. Isn't it almost unfathomable?
Yeah.
To think, oh, I'm not even going to try. Not because I have already thought it through and realized that there's a better pathway if I give up and eat the food, but just because, yum, yum, that looks good. You know, that's hard for me to imagine, but it's reality. Those are the people we're playing with when we play Survivor sometimes. And you have to know that about them in order to make them your best pawn. You can't treat them differently from that. You can't treat them as if they would be you or do what you would do. You can't in the game, or you're not playing well.
Rich, could you beat Wes in the McNugget eating contest?
I think with my eyes closed.
All right, that would be a good matchup.
Something like those. He said something like 50. Aren't those tiny little pieces of chicken?
Yeah.
I'd be breathing them in. I don't think 50. I think 50 would be long in my rearview mirror in 5 minutes.
How about when they brought up when Jeff was naked on Two and a Half Men? Now, I know you are a connoisseur of the naked arts. What did you think of Jeff Probst on Two and a Half Men?
I got a kick out of them bringing it up in Survivor. First of all, you know, that's interesting to me. Jeff's an executive producer. I wonder what that discussion was like, why that was in edit. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's one of those pieces. But Jeff doing it was also an interesting thing, because I clearly recall when people were looking at me as if I had 14 heads, like, are you crazy? You're going to be hated for this. And you know, our culture has changed. And the nudity thing isn't as off-putting. It's still off-putting to many people. But we're moving in the direction of more practical understanding of, oh, it's a body that everybody has. And, yes, we're all naked and we all do certain things, and so it's for me, it's just interesting to watch overall the larger culture be subject to the idea of our being human, and that's what I see when I see things like that on Two and a Half Men. Oh, look, Jeff Probst now is even walking around naked.
But doesn't Jeff Probst need to lose the tray of bacon, though? Isn't that like literally half-assing it to then be naked and then covered up?
Yeah, I think that's half-assing it. But, you know, he's in that position of thinking he's a particular, in a particular spot, particularly professional, so that maybe my junk shouldn't be swinging around without it being covered with something. You know, let's just let them think I'm naked. And, you know, that's just evidence we haven't moved far enough. You know, we're naked and afraid. They're naked, but they're still blurred and covered and all this other stuff so that we can get used to the idea that people are walking around naked before someday we might see that and not even care.
Yeah. And Jeff Probst looks good, right?
Jeff Probst does look good. You know, he takes,
he's in his 50s.
He takes great care of himself. Yeah.
Going back to Naked and Afraid, why haven't we seen you on Naked and Afraid? We had another survivor. One of the survivors from Survivor One World was on Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, let's ask about that. How come nobody has? I mean, I should be getting royalties, but I've never even gotten a phone call from them.
You invented Naked and Afraid.
I know, right? You would think they would recognize that and give me at least a shout out or something, involved in some way. I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be my idea of fun. I mean, I watch people struggle. Again, they're going into a situation where they know what they're going to encounter. How does your head go to such drama when you get there? I don't know. I would make the best of whatever happens.
All right. Kelsey Ann wants to know, why wasn't Richard part of the Squatty Potty Shark Tank episode? Rich, why didn't the creators of Squatty Potty bring you on Shark Tank recently?
Now, there's a great question. How much of a forerunner am I? You know, I was touting Squatty Potty as early as I found out about it. It's a great product. I would love to have helped them out on Shark Tank. I thought that was great that they got on there. Good for Burnett, whose show it is, and good for them. That was great exposure.
Rich, can I tell you something?
Are you using it yet?
I have one.
All right, there you go. Doesn't it just make sense? It's how we've evolved to boot. Differently. You know, it's just good for everything about our colons and our system.
I do. I have it. I have the Squatty Potty.
All right. Now you need a Toto. Do you have a Toto?
No, I don't even know what that is.
I know. I've had a Toto for years before the Squatty Potty.
What's the Toto?
Amazing. Toto is a toilet made in Japan. Ask Whoopi Goldberg about it. She's talked about it one time. But for more than a decade, probably 10, 15 years now, I've had Totos everywhere. It's a washlet. You can buy the seat, or you can buy the toilet, and it's, instead of having a toilet and a bidet, it's combined, but the seat is warm, the water is warm, you'll never, ever want to poop without one again. So you get your Toto combined with your Squatty Potty, and you're living life well.
You're living the dream.
You are. I swear to God. And honest to God, forget roses. If you want to get your wife something that will make her happy, buy her a Toto. She will not know what to do with it.
I don't think you've met my wife, Rich. I don't know that.
Swear to God. I mean, believe me, the people that I've had try it, run out of my house and go buy them.
Toto?
For women, it's Toto. It has for the back and for the front for women.
Yes.
It blows you dry.
Whoa.
It has a heated seat. When you poop, there's no smell because it has a filter. You would not believe. It's amazing.
What is it? It's a toilet, or it's like a seat for the toilet?
It's a toilet, but you can buy a version. You know, it's a seat for the toilet.
Okay.
And you need an electrician to put a little plug by your toilet or nearby because it needs to be plugged in.
Yes.
But it's worth it. It's not that expensive. It's not cheap, but it's not that expensive. You use the thing multiple times a day. It's very, very, very high quality, really well built. So literally, I've had the same one that I bought maybe 15 years ago still functioning without ever having any problem. Ever, ever, ever.
Rich, is this a paid endorsement or this is just a recommendation?
I wish this was a paid endorsement, but I've never talked to the Toto people, and I bought each Toto on my own with no discount. This is just about pure joy. I mean, Squatty Potty is about health.
Yes.
Toto is about pleasure. It's about health and play. It's just amazing. Every time you poop, you're clean, dried, and squatting in the perfectly healthy position. It's amazing.
All right. Helpful when you get taco overload.
Toto,
you're not in Kansas anymore. That's right.
No, you're not. I'm telling you, stop it. I swear to you, Rob. You will not believe.
All right. Well, let me see. Let me look into this. All right. Brock Cheek wants to know that he just watched Borneo for the first time since 2000 and wants to know, would the game be different today if the jury had rewarded Kelly's game plan instead of yours? Would we be approaching Survivor 30 had Kelly won the first Survivor?
You know, I don't know if we'd be approaching Survivor 30, and that's not, I'm trying not to have, you know, an egotistical response about, oh, what a good player I am. That I don't think is why Survivor has lasted. I think it's had little to do with it. I think Survivor's lasted because it's an amazing glimpse into who we are in real ways that people aren't even really necessarily aware that they're watching. They're just kind of drawn to it when they do get into the game and watch it being played. So I don't think the impact of whether I won or Kelly won based on gameplay would have been, I think it would be, I do think it would have been significant, but I don't think it would be impactful in whether the game has lasted, because the game lasted and unfolded because of all of what we learn about who we are as people as the game's gone on. But Kelly's gameplay was very different from mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would have been some very different discussions. And had it been rewarded, there would have been many discussions that have still not been had in public.
Yes, yes. I don't think that the show would have had the success that it had if you weren't the first winner, because I think that really was like an aha moment about the show after you won, where it was like, oh, you have to play the game. Oh, like I think that was sort of like, even though it was happening the whole summer, I think that really did make people like going, especially going into the second season and thereafter. And I'm sure that it might have gotten that way, but just at that moment in time, when it was so popular, it was like everybody realized that's what the game was.
I agree. I'm a little cautious and a little stunted by you saying everybody realized.
Well, that's a lot of people did.
Like they're still on figuring that out.
Well, Rich, some people have said that this season is a lot like Borneo because there's so many people that don't even know how to play the game this season. It's almost like going back in time to the first season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's about it still unfolding. People are still trying to figure it out. Now, I go back and forth with this in my head, but I wonder what you think. Part of this, I've got to give credit to Lynn Spillman. You know, she's casting people, and she's not casting, I don't think, you know, just blatant idiots. She's casting people who are real. She's casting a reflection of the people who want to play the game. And many of those people don't know what the game is still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 29 seasons in. And I don't know. I think that's a powerful thing to watch, and I have to give her credit for showing us that.
Yeah, I think casting the pairs is tough also. It's hard to find one person who knows what they're doing, let alone two in the same family.
Agreed.
Yeah. Rich, I'm sure a lot of people want to know, this is from Ian Kevin Sevilla wants to know, if you got to play in a blood versus water format, would your husband play with you? If not, who would? Would you ever do a blood versus water? Would you play with your son? Would you play with Emiliano?
Good question. I, you know, there are so many different people that I could play with. Emmy is not a survivor aficionado like me, so that would be interesting. He, you know, playing with him would be fun, but I wouldn't count on him to be strategic.
Mm-hmm.
I love him to death, but I wouldn't count on him to be too strategic. He's a little bit emotional too, and you know, my sister maybe I could play with, my son, one of my biological children.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, there were some interesting pairings. I have twin brothers who are a lot younger than me. They're in their 30s.
Twinnies.
One of them, you know, it's 20. I would play. I would really enjoy the idea of blood versus water, but I'm not sure with whom I would do it.
Did they contact you during the first casting for Blood versus Water?
They did.
And was it not a good time for you, or was it ultimately that they went in a different direction?
They went in another direction, but you know, they don't tell me why.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It wasn't about timing for me. That you know, they're doing their own thing. You know, they always have.
Yeah,
they have their reasons, which I may never know.
Yeah. Now, that is crazy. The only thing I can think of is that they want to save you for, you know, something that they want to do at a different point, that they don't want to use you in Blood versus Water.
Maybe. Let's hope. I don't know. I would love to play again. I have no idea whether they have any intention of bringing me back. Maybe there haven't been enough people who contacted them and told them to bring me back.
All right. Well, I'll stump for you anytime. Yeah. Anytime. Ron Chan wants to know, since you brought up about your biological children, Richard, since your sperm donor story became public, besides Emily and Devin, have you been reunited with any other of your children?
No, more yet. No, just Emily and Devin, and the relationships continue. They're great. Really, yeah. Really enjoying, you know, getting to know one another, spending time. But no new kids yet.
Okay. All right. Well, you never know. Maybe somebody's listening.
That's true.
Wendy Yunker wants to know, do you think that doing splits while receiving the immunity necklace is a good luck? Should Reed have accepted the immunity necklace while doing splits last night?
I thought that was an interesting choice. I thought it was a little less thought out than he might have done. I get why he did it. You know, he really wanted to stretch, probably. I don't think he was trying to show off. But again, you need to think about every one of those moves while you're in the midst of the game.
Yeah, I thought it was coming off a little like a showboaty, I thought, after winning that challenge.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
I was jealous.
Yeah, why? If you could do splits, you would do them?
Well, not then.
Other times.
But I'd love to be that limber.
Yes, yes. Matt Holtzclaw wants to know, who will soon be bamboozled?
Who will be bamboozled? Well, it looks to me like Keith will be bamboozled. I don't know how.
I think he's permanently bamboozled.
That's my point. Who else will be bamboozled? I have a feeling Taylor will be bamboozled, and again, won't really know what's happening. I don't think Reed will be bamboozled. I think he knows it's coming. I think Alex will be bamboozled.
Yeah.
We haven't talked much about him, but he's just, you know, there.
Yeah.
He's really just there. And he's one of those people, like Keith, there's no chance of him winning in the final two. So there may not be any reason to get rid of him.
Yeah. Rich, we haven't talked at all about Josh from earlier this season, and I'd like to just get your take on him, because I have a feeling that you probably liked him as well as a player.
I do. I thought he was a decent player, but not decent. I thought he was a really good player. I thought he understood the game, and I thought he and Reed must have really collaborated over the years in understanding it, in talking about the details, and really having down what Survivor is. But I thought Josh was a little overexposed for someone who understood the game so well.
Yeah.
To be that early, that to be that overexposed that early in the game left him where he is today.
You know, Rich, I don't know if you ever take a chance to look at any of the secret scenes or anything, or like the Ponderosa videos on the website after they get back. But there's a really good one today after Wes gets back. And there's a conversation that's happening between Josh and Jeremy. And he touched on this a little bit during the show, that he comes from a very religious family. I think his dad is a pastor, Josh. And it was a difficult circumstance for him in his coming out to his family. And, you know, Jeremy has a brother also who's gay, who came out to the family. And Jeremy's brother had said to Jeremy, now that I told you this, are we good? And Jeremy said to his brother, you know, of course we're good. I mean, you know, you're my brother, you know, that's you're my brother. And, you know, Josh is talking about this and talking about how, like, that definitely wasn't how it went for him, and how that's been a struggle for him, and with, you know, dealing with his family. And it's just you know, very interesting story to get some background on Josh.
Agreed. And there are many people in Josh's position. It's just all I can hope is that Josh and people in that similar boats recognize that the issues aren't theirs. They can do only so much to help their family members or friends who aren't mature enough, who aren't evolved sufficiently to well handle the idea that we're different from one another. But there are limits. You know, you can only do so much, and it's really important to not let someone else's issues that they have not yet dealt with, haven't changed, will affect them negatively in their lives way too heavily in your own life. You know, if Josh and Reed are meant to be happy together, they need to accept that and be happy together without worrying overly about how it affects people who should be better able to deal with someone else's happiness.
Nick Fishman wants to know, with now half the players remaining being in pairs and the other half being in singles, is there any reason that we won't see the pairs lasting until the end? Now, that's an interesting breakdown going into the final eight of four people in pairs, four people not in pairs. Do you think that this will end with the last four being the pairs?
Oh, not given next week's theme.
Yeah. and if you did, John and Jacqueline appear to be in a big feud next week,
which is fascinating to me, because of all times in life to be that to be that angry with one another as it appears that they were, this is a tough spot. But even in addition to that, if Natalie is you know, on her game as I think she is, I think she wouldn't hesitate to take out John at the right time. So I'm not sure. I don't think it's safe to assume that the couples will stay couples and the singles will be gone.
Yeah. No, I don't think the singles have their act together. I mean, I think that it'll probably get down to the five, and then maybe, you know, you have one of the couples brings in that fifth person to take out the other couple with a 3-versus-2 situation.
Perhaps, but this is why the game is so interesting to me. Literally anything can happen, and a big move by somebody could put them in the catbird seat. You know, it really could. I don't know who might do it other than Natalie, but it could happen. If I were Natalie, I would worry that you know, those couples that bond that they have is not something she has. That's just part of the game.
Mike Bloom wants to know, does Richard have a winner pick for the new cast of The Celebrity Apprentice? Rich, have you followed this?
I haven't.
Okay. It's an interesting group if you have a chance to look at it. Also, somebody, Marcelo Sperano, wanted to email me to see if you saw that your old friend Gary Busey won Celebrity Big Brother this summer.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
You I didn't even know there was such a thing. Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah, you should do Celebrity Big Brother UK. Celebrity Big Brother UK.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Gary Busey won?
Yeah, Busey won.
Okay, that's incomprehensible to me, literally. I didn't know he could tie his shoe. That wasn't a game. You know, if you watched Celebrity Apprentice, Gary Busey wasn't acting when he was portrayed as kind of poo-poo. I mean, there were things he was doing that couldn't be aired. They were so, you know, really out there. And I don't know what to say with that. I have no idea. You really shocked me with that one.
Yeah.
I can't imagine winning a strategic game.
Well, in fairness, the Big Brother UK version, it's a fan vote. So it's not not a very strategic game.
Very different game. Thank you for letting me know. That makes more sense. There's no telling what people will vote. There's no telling whatsoever. It would ruin Survivor as the game is now, I think, if the fans were voting, because the fans aren't affected by the gameplay. They're just affected by what they feel about the individual.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I know that we had some difficulties with the connections, but you stuck it out. You were a trooper. You took some time out of your Thanksgiving to spend with me and with the listeners of the podcast, and I am eternally grateful, Rich.
I've been with you the whole way. We're in Maine now, so it's great.
Yeah, fantastic. And you've been with me the whole way of this podcast. I mean, we're going into 5 years. I think you now have the lead for most episode recaps. I believe this was the seventh time we've recapped an episode together. So very fantastic job, Rich.
I'm yours anytime you want. I really enjoy it. And it's really a pleasure to do it with you, Rob.
Oh, well, very few people say that, Rich. And so good luck. Hope that the dog doesn't have any more gas the rest of the way, and enjoy your time with Emiliano this week.
Thanks very much. Happy for today to everybody.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, everybody. There you have it. That was Richard Hatch back here on Rob Has a Podcast. I do want to apologize about the switch up in the middle of the interview to go between the call qualities. I really always do try to get you guys as good of a quality from the guests that I'm talking to. I know it's definitely not as fun to listen to the guests when they don't have as good of a connection. I try to do the best that I can under any of the given circumstances, and it's something that always I'm pretty focused on, and something that I do always try to improve on. So it kind of bums me out when we're not able to get you guys the best quality possible that you deserve on Rob Has a Podcast. All right, so I am going to go and shift into Thanksgiving mode for a bit. We're going to get ready to do our voicemails coming up this weekend. I don't want to say quite yet what my guest is going to be for the voicemail show. I just want to make sure it's confirmed. They're making sure that the family that they have visiting is going to be out. And so it looks like probably Sunday afternoon I'm shooting to record that. So you got plenty of time. Get your voicemails in. robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And again, really would appreciate it this weekend. If you're going to be doing any of your shopping on Amazon, if you use our links, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Lots of great deals happening for the Black Friday weekend on Amazon. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Let me give it out a hashtag just in case you guys did make it to the end. I'm a little torn on this one. I was thinking originally dog fart, but let's not do that. Maybe Toto could be another interesting way to go. Maybe that's another one, or maybe Hatch Giving or
Hatchy Thanksgiving. Let's do that. Hatchy Thanksgiving. I think that's probably the best and safest hashtag of the ones that I mentioned. Have a great holiday. Hope you guys had a really good Thanksgiving. And of course, we'll talk to you in our next episode talking about the voicemails from Survivor San Juan del Sur. Take care, everybody. Bye.